I'd like to call this council and committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present this evening.
Thank you. There is no addendum this evening. Just some very brief announcements. Greater Fort Erie Chamber of Commerce held its biannual Business Excellence Award ceremony on Friday evening. And emceed ably by Councillor Passero and assisted by Dolores Fabiano. I just wanted to, because it's an important part of our community, just wanted to mention the names of the winners of the various categories. It seems appropriate because of the impact that they have on our community. The Large Business of Excellence Award went to the Buffalo Canoe Club. Small Business of Excellence Award went to Parton Electric. The Employer of Excellence went to Durwood Jones Barkwell and Company. The Accessible Business Award went to Service Ontario. The Entrepreneur of Excellence Award went to Laura Schneider. Community Involvement in Volunteerism, John Maurice. A Young Professional of Excellence went to Emily Barnett and Casey Schneider, their business called The Place to Meet. Emerging New Business Award went to the Bell Tower Community Arts and Entertainment Complex, and the Technology, Innovation, and Environmental Initiative Award went to Insight Instrument Corporation. The Exceptional Customer Service Award went to Ida Maisie, the Barrel Restaurant. She's been there, I think, since it opened and plans to be there even after it closes. And the Fort Erie Attractors Award went to Safari Niagara. I should recognize that TD Canada Trust, V&E Estates, Maria's Catering, Kojiko, Andy Harris, and Meridian were sponsors of the event. Very interesting evening and went very smoothly, I must say. There were a number of obviously other businesses that were nominated for these awards, and I would suggest that if you go to the Chamber of Commerce website, you'll be able to see the names of all of the businesses and the individuals who were nominated. I wanted to congratulate the Fort Erie Cannons because they became the Niagara District Baseball Champions, and they're continuing their own series of excellence. So Friday night was the Chamber of Commerce Business Excellence Awards, and then the following day, I just want to very briefly mention that on Saturday, unfortunately, Fort Erie and people from Niagara Falls gathered for the funeral of Cole Donoff, an individual of remarkable skill and talent, well-beloved by all of the students and teammates and family members and people in the community that knew him. I don't think I've seen a service where there were so many people. There had to be 700 to 800 individuals inside the Leisureplex. I know that there were about 300 who could not get in. And Jeff Allen, the coach of Cole's baseball team from Niagara Falls, did a very heart-wrenching eulogy. Martha Lockwood, as usual, performed a very, very excellent service. The family is well-known in the community on all sides, and it was nice to see so many people out to support the family. And I know that they have plans to try to do something that will memorialize Cole and what he meant to those that knew him and those that he touched and to our community. So in the days to come, I hope that we'll be able to participate in some type of meaningful commemorative of some sort. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a conflict of interest with report PDS 65-2017 as I do business with a relative of the Millers.
Thank you. And that would also be the public meeting?
Yes.
Are there any other reasons? Okay. There are no public notices of upcoming meetings, but we do have two public meetings this evening. One is, and we'll start with the first one. This is for a draft plan of subdivision and property rezoning Yiliming International Real Estate Limited, John Gu, and this is with respect to Spears Garden Subdivision Phase 2. We will hear from staff the background information relative to this application, and then we will hear from the applicant or a representative of the applicant if so desired. And then finally, we will hear from members of the public who may have questions or who take a position in favor of or in opposition to the application. Good evening, Mr. Kernahan. Please proceed.
Nine lots for single detached dwellings which will front on a public roadway. Future public roadway connecting Pettit Road to the Spears Garden draft approved subdivision. The proposed subdivision will be developed as phase two of the Spears Garden subdivision, which received draft plan approval in May 2015. Phase one of the Spears Garden subdivision, which is located adjacent to the subject property to the east, includes 76 lots for single detached dwellings and four blocks of townhouses for a total of 27 townhouse units, as well as a stormwater management pond. Notification of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing an ad in the September 7th, 2017 edition of the Fort Erie Times. Property owners living within 120 meters of the subject property were also mailed notice of this public meeting on that same date. An aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Spears High Point neighborhood on the east side of Pettit Road, south of Birdie Street. It's an aerial image providing some context on the subject lands. Lands surrounding the subject site are comprised of the following uses. To the north and south are single detached dwellings. To the east, as I mentioned, is the Spears Garden Phase 1 draft approved subdivision. And to the west is Pettit Road as well as single detached dwellings. Spears High Point Secondary Plan designates the subject property as low-density residential. The proposed uses of the property are permitted by the secondary plan, and the intensification of the lot is encouraged by the policies of this plan. The slide shows the natural heritage features in the vicinity of the subject property. There are no natural heritage features on the site, and the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority confirmed that there would be no impact to the natural heritage features surrounding the site as a consequence of the development of the subdivision. Subject property is currently zoned residential 1 R1 zone, which permits single detached dwellings on lots with a minimum of 18 meters of frontage and lot areas with a minimum of 600 square meters. The zoning bylaw amendment proposes to rezone the subject site to a site-specific R2A zone, which permits single detached dwellings on lots with a minimum of 12 meters frontage and areas of 375 square meters. Proposed zoning includes a site-specific provision that would require an increased rear yard setback of 7.5 meters, whereas only 6 meters is required in the R2A zone. All other regulations within the R2A zone would apply to this subdivision. This slide shows the proposed draft plan for the subject property. 7 lots that are proposed for immediate development of single detached dwellings are numbered 2 through 8. The existing dwelling, located at 1230 Pettit Road, is located on Part 1. This dwelling will be demolished in the future and divided into a total of 2 lots, or an additional 2 single detached dwellings. This slide shows the subject property looking east from Pettit Road, and that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. I wonder if we could just get some clarification. So we had recently done some changes to the residential zoning categories to deal with some of the changes that developers were requesting. How does it fit into that context?
I think the most recent changes that we did were applicable to Crystal Beach only, and that created a new zone, which is an R2B zone, similar to the R2A zone, which is proposed here. Further back in history, we did do an amendment to the R2 regulations, the R2A zone has been largely unchanged since it was created back in 1990. So these are fairly old regulations which typically apply to new subdivision lands for single detached dwellings.
Right. And I noticed that in the phase one subdivision, most of the lots are close to 16 meters frontage up to 18 meters. So these would be different than that. These would be much more intense.
That's correct. They would have smaller frontages and areas than the phase one of the subdivision.
Okay, which makes them somewhat different than the new houses in the new subdivision and the houses on Pettit.
That's correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any questions of Mr. Kernahan? Thank you very much, Mr. Kernahan. We'll now hear from the developer, if the developer or representative wishes to speak. Good evening. Good. Could we have your name and address for the record, please?
Yep. So my name is Jordan Vanderhoeven. My address is 261 Martindale Road in St. Catharines. Yep. So good evening, Council and Mayor. So I'm here today on behalf of the owner of the property at 1230 Pettit Road, also referred to as Spears Garden Phase 2. And the application today, as Matt said, is for a draft plan of subdivision and zoning bylaw amendment. So the Spears Garden subdivision, so a little bit of background into the application is that the first phase of the Spears Garden subdivision previously received draft approval in May of 2015. The property subject to the application today was not included in the original approval and is located at the corner of Pettit Road and what is to be Seymour Avenue. The current lot is extremely deep with about 120 meters of depth and can easily be incorporated into the Spears Garden subdivision as it will be fronting onto Seymour Avenue. So the application. So the first part of the application is for the draft plan of subdivision, which is proposing to create 7 new lots on the existing site while we will be retaining the existing dwelling for the time being, and we'll have to come up with a subsequent application if we wanted to move that into, convert that into 2 additional dwellings. The rezoning application is being made to change the zoning on the property from R1, which is a zone currently geared towards the existing dwelling, to an R2A site-specific zone. This zone is proposed to have 12-meter frontages and 35-meter lot depths, and the site-specific aspect of the zoning will also include an increased rear yard setback of 7.5 meters from the 6 meters that are required for this zone. So the increased rear yard setback is in our intention to reduce the impact on the neighboring property to the north, as it will be provided with larger backyards due to the increased setback. So overall, this application can be seen as a natural extension to the first phase of the Spears Garden subdivision, as the lot areas are somewhat similar to the area, as it was mentioned that the frontages are a little different, but in the phase one subdivision there are townhouse dwellings, so it's kind of a medium in between the 2 uses that are seen in phase one. And the goal of the proposal is to provide a development that will flow properly with what has already been approved in the first phase. So public comments. So on September 12th, a public information open house took place, and throughout the public information open house, 2 main issues arose. The first concern was traffic, as a number of residents were concerned about the current state of traffic in the area and what the impact will be with the build-out of the Spears Garden subdivision. In this regard, a traffic impact analysis was prepared for the first phase of the subdivision, and an addendum was prepared to account for the additional lots being proposed in phase 2. This addendum concluded that only an additional 8 or that This addendum concluded that the additional 8 lots will only generate a total of 15 a.m. peak hour trips and 11 p.m. peak hour trips. With this minimal increase in traffic, the intersection and the subdivision are forecasted to operate with overall acceptable levels of service with minimum delay and congestion during peak hours. In conclusion, the recommendations of the study were that no remedial measures were required to accommodate the growth of these additional lots to the proposal. In regards to speeding concerns, which a number of residents stated, this issue, I guess, is more geared towards local law enforcement and could be handled in a way of more monitoring with police. But at the same time, also the increase in intersections should lead to increased driver awareness for the site, as more cars will be making left-hand turns, in turn slowing down traffic on that street. The second concern that we got for the application was drainage. The drainage for the property will be addressed through rear yard swales that directly connects to the stormwater to the east and will be moving away from the existing residents. And so overall, we believe that the application is in good planning, as the site is located inside the urban boundary for the municipality and promotes the efficient use of existing and what will be infrastructure for the area. And in addition, with the size of the lots and larger backyard/rear yard setbacks, we wanted this application to fit in with what has already been approved for the first area well, reducing the impacts to the best of our ability to the existing residents. And with this being said, if there are any questions, I'm here to answer them. Thank you.
Do any members of council have any questions? Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. through you to the gentleman presenting. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name. Vanderhoeven. Vanderhoeven. Thank you very much, Mr. Vanderhoeven. You stated that the proposed dwellings here that are going to go adjacent to Seymour Avenue are townhouses. Am I correct?
No, so I believe the comment was the first phase, which has already been approved, includes a pocket of townhouses.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't, the first phase isn't just 100% single detached dwellings. There are, I believe it's 23 townhouses that are on the site as well.
Right. They're on the site, but they're deep within on an abutting street that hasn't been built yet. So they'll have no impact on the existing, existing neighborhood. My concern is the lots that you're going to divide, although you say you're going to have an increased setback for the rear yard to impact the, to spare the neighbor to the north, any kind of impact. What about the neighbor of the south that's going to live across the street and have the side windows on their home facing? What type of dwellings are you proposing on building on this section that you're asking to be rezoned?
It will be single detached dwellings, and the houses to the south, there would be, I guess, the buffer of the street itself, which hasn't been built yet, so that would be something that's coming in the future, but we are proposing it will be single detached dwellings.
Any other counselors? So the phase one has parcels that are close to 100 feet deep, 31 meters mostly.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, 16, primarily 16 to 18 meters wide. The townhouse blocks look like they're 9 to 10.5 meters. Those are blocks, two blocks down in the southeast corner, I guess. So it doesn't seem like 40-foot lots are actually in a logical extension or a natural extension, to use your words, of phase one. Certainly not reflective of the neighborhood where most of the lots would be in the 80 to 100-foot frontage area. An old neighborhood for sure. Any comments on why it would be necessary to have this type of density?
Yeah, we think that just because the rear yard setback does accommodate that privacy aspect to the parcel to the north, that the reduced frontage for this site is appropriate and can be appropriate, just because it does promote the intensification of the site. It is located within the urban boundary and it does conform to the zoning that we are proposing to amend it to, the R2A zoning.
Okay. Any other questions? Councilor Lubberts.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just to follow up on what the mayor was asking, so what I'm gathering here is the smaller frontage here, your thoughts are you're still going to maintain the same lot, square footage, I guess, in the lot, but with the narrower, you're deeper, so you're Is that basically your reasoning for the smaller lots?
Yeah, the reasoning for the narrower frontages is just because it does provide more lot depth because the current configuration of 1230 is a pretty wide and deep lot, and we are able to just accommodate the difference in having a larger backyard over having the same size frontage as seen in phase one, the 16 meter frontages.
Okay, thank you very much. Just one more. You said something about the rear yard setback would be 7.5 meters instead of 6 meters.
Yes,
six correct. Meters. And I'm just curious as to why you had to get an amendment for that. I think, wasn't six like a minimum? If you wanted to go more, you could just go more?
Yep. So the six was amended. So we had to get we would have to get a zoning bylaw amendment to go through with the application. And we thought to just enforce that the 7.5 meter setback would be required. If we do amend it, then it would be required. So
okay.
It just is. Yeah. Just
okay.
Provision. Just
thank
ensure.
You. Yeah. Thank you.
There are no other questions. Oh, Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you, just a question. And I have questions for staff once the report's on the floor. But you may know this. Do you know what year the traffic impact study was performed?
Yep, I believe it is. It was in 2015, and then we prepared an addendum to account for these phases, which was done this year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vanderhoeven.
Great, thank you.
That takes us then to anyone who wishes to speak to the matter. I see Signe Hansen waving her hands, but I'm sure you don't want it. Okay. If there is no one who wishes to speak to council with respect to the application, then I'll declare this public meeting closed. And that will take us then to the second public meeting, which is an official plan amendment application by Bill and Jim Miller, owners of a parcel of property on the east side of Thompson Road, north of Bowen Road, and south of Arcadia Street. And I see Kira Dolch getting up, so I take it you're going to be addressing council? Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you, Your Worship. An official plan amendment application was received from Lee White of PLW Consulting on behalf of Jim and Bill Miller for their property located on the east side of Thompson Road, north of Bowen Road, and south of Arcadia Street. Notification of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act by placing a notice in the September 7th edition of the Fort Erie Times newspaper. Property owners within 120 meters of the subject area were also mailed notice of the complete application and public meeting on September 6, 2017. This is an aerial photograph of the subject property as well as the surrounding area. The subject lands are located in the Bridgeburg neighborhood, south of Arcadia Street and east of Thompson Road. The subject lands are north of Rio Vista Golf Course and located at the western edge of the town's urban area boundary.
Excuse me. I'm just looking at this report, and figure three shows called the subject property, but it goes all the way it goes north of Arcadia. This parcel is just south of Arcadia?
Just south of Arcadia. The property is part of the amendment.
Okay. Is it going to be complexed with a parcel north of Arcadia? Do you know?
Again, that the piece north of Arcadia is other holdings of Mr. Miller's.
All right.
But not subject to this amendment.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to declare a conflict with respect to this, and because I'm maybe complex and my property is adjacent to the northerly boundary of properties. So who's the acting counselor? Counselor Nutt. Perhaps you could take the chair. I apologize.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Madam Clerk, I'm going to declare a conflict on this and then the report as well.
You can go ahead and proceed, Ms. Dolch.
Thank you. This is an aerial image highlighting the subject lands. Lands surrounding the subject site comprise of the following uses. Arcadia Street road allowance to the north, vacant urban residential lands and environmentally sensitive lands which contain a provincially significant wetland also to the north. To the south, Bowen Road, north road allowance, Rio Vista Golf Course, the future home of Fort Erie Hills subdivision, and environmentally sensitive lands which contain a provincially significant wetland. To the west, rural lands containing residential dwellings, a non-conforming paintball facility, and environmentally sensitive lands which contain a provincially significant wetland. To the east, we have vacant open space lands and environmentally sensitive lands which also contain a provincially significant wetland. The subject lands are currently designated open space, shown in green. They are also designated environmental protection, which is the darker blue, and environmental conservation, which is the dash or dots you see on the screen. The open space designation permits a variety of active and passive recreational open space uses, and the environmental protection and wetland areas permit no development. The environmental conservation overlay designation permits no development without an environmental impact study. The proposal is to amend the official plan to facilitate future residential development on subject lands. As part of the amendment, the open space designation would change to urban residential. The environment protection and wetland area designation would increase in size to include a 30-meter buffer. And as a result, the environmental conservation designated areas would be reduced to accommodate the increase to the environmental protection areas. The particulars of the amendment include, in the urban residential designation, a minimum density of 50 persons and jobs per hectare and a maximum density of 85 persons and jobs per hectare. Also, to permit stormwater management facilities and any necessary pumping stations in the urban residential designation, and to include a neighborhood plan concept to be approved by the Town of Fort Erie, showing how the site will integrate into the entire Bridgeburg neighborhood. In the environmental conservation designation overlay, these areas shall still be subject to finalization of an environmental impact study. there'll be no change in that regard. In the environmental protection areas, these areas will continue to be protected. However, an additional use will be a permitted pedestrian path within that area. The proposed official plan amendment is set up to address the outcomes of the future environmental impact study by requiring that those areas determined environmentally significant be rezoned through a future zoning bylaw amendment application. As part of those significant areas, any areas deemed significant would be classified environmental protection EP zone. And those areas determined to be not environmentally significant or developable will be rezoned to a future residential zoning. Both the Niagara Region and the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority were circulated for comment on this application. Neither agency objected to the proposed official plan amendment. The region has requested changes to the density requirement policy to ensure that the future requirement of 60 persons and jobs per hectare be required if they are in place at the time of the future applications coming forward. They have also requested additional wording be added to relating to species at risks. This slide shows the natural heritage features in the vicinity of the site. The environmental protection in dark blue again, and the environmental conservation natural heritage features, environmental conservation natural heritage feature in a dashed hatch are located on the subject property. The changes to the environmental protection and wetlands area and the environmental conservation areas were outlined in the previous slide. Other environmental protection and conservation areas exist to the east and to some extent the north and south of the subject property. The majority of the property is currently zoned open space OS zone permitting recreational uses, environmental protection EP zone permitting conservation and resource management, hazard age zone permitting agricultural uses, accessory uses to an existing use and flood protection, and environmental conservation EC overlay, which permits minor additions and enlargements of existing uses. A future zoning bylaw amendment will be required to rezone these lands to permit residential development. Once the full EIS is completed, the applicant will be in a position to identify the appropriate zones for the developable areas, as well as illustrate any significant environmental areas that need to be rezoned from environmental conservation to environmental protection. This is a view of the subject property looking north from Bowen Road allowance. This is a view of the subject property looking east from Bowen Road North Road allowance. This is a view of the subject property looking south from Arcadia Street Road allowance. And this is a picture looking east from Arcadia Street Road allowance. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dolch. I see Mr. White in the audience. Would he like to come up and speak? If you could provide your name and address.
Lee White, 116 Jarvis Street in Fort Erie. I promise to keep it very short. Ms. Dolch covered the majority of the basics of it, and being the fact that it is an official plan amendment and not a zoning bylaw or subdivision application, there's not a lot of details in how exactly this will manifest itself when it does get developed sometime in the future, but there's a lot of work to be done in the meantime, and those details will be forthcoming. Subject site, I'm sure you're familiar with. Ms. Doles mentioned that. Surrounding uses, largely forested with some meadow areas in there, with being on the westerly end of the urban area boundary there, Rio Vista to the south. This is the graphic that was referenced earlier. The reason that this does include some of the lands further to the north is this is an excerpt from an environmental impact study that has already been done. It was deemed to be efficient to do it for the larger parcels, as some of the environmental features do extend north off of the subject parcel, which is just the southern 75 acres or so of this. We'll see on here the purpose of this environmental study was a constraints analysis that was done to basically say where are areas that we can't touch and where are potentially developable areas. And the ones that are sort of shaded white here are the areas that have preliminarily been determined to be developable areas. And we've assigned a buffer to the environmental areas to encroachment and envision that this provides a reasonably accurate depiction of what areas could be developed in the future. It won't be 100% of the site by any means, and that is not the intention, nor would it be permitted. So we have, with this information in hand, it was provided to the Environmental Advisory Committee as well, and we did conduct a field review with the Environmental Advisory Committee, and it was tough slugging at times, but we managed to get through, and I think there's a pretty good understanding of where we are right now, as well as a commitment down the road that future environmental studies will be done, and the terms of reference has already been developed for an environmental impact study that will be undertaken at some time in the future. This is similar to the one that was previously on the screen. This is a little bit older version because it's still got open space areas on Rio Vista's property, but it's on was available when the report was prepared. So basically, those areas that are the green with that hatch on the subject parcel, basically the green would be changed to yellow. What would happen as part of this official plan amendment. So what is designated as open space at this time would become urban residential only in the official plan. So that's the official plan designation. By no means are we developing tomorrow. A lot of work needs to happen. And as is recognized in the staff report, that would require an additional environmental impact study, archaeological investigation, tree preservation plan. We'd have to go through draft plan of subdivision or condo, depending on how the development moves forward, potentially site plan and zoning bylaw amendment. So a lot of work needs to go on, but first step would be the environmental impact study so we know exactly the amount of land that could be utilized before we start spending a lot of time finding the details of what it would look like. We do expect generally that our density will be lower than proposed Vista to the south in 50 to 85 persons and per hectare. So at an average of 2.3 to 2.5 persons per household, that's going to manifest itself. Not that many units, but it'll be predominantly single family with some towns and a remote possibility of small apartment. So unless you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer what I can at this point, given the vague nature of the proposal. Official plan amendment from open space to urban residential.
Thank you, Mr. White. Do any members of council have any questions? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I direct my question to Mr. White or to Kira Dolch or maybe even Matt Kernahan. I don't know who would answer this, but I'm council's representative on the Environmental Advisory Committee, and just looking at the report, I'm not seeing anything in here from the comments. And I know we did do a site visit there, but I don't see our comments there. And if I remember correctly, I think there was some concerns of the fact that there wasn't really any actual plan for development, but. And so if I remember correctly, we reserved comment because we needed to see a plan because we were concerned about buffer zones and where the developable lands were and what they were going to build and where they were going to build. And so the Environmental Advisory Committee is waiting to hear from that. So my question is, what's different from what we're asking for today and what the Environmental Advisory Committee went and did their site visit for?
Through you to the councillor. We don't have comments yet from an Environmental Advisory Committee. As the application was circulated to them, your meeting is to be on the 18th of October. At that time, we'll get your comments before bringing back a recommendation. I know, obviously, you've seen the environmental impact study previously before the application was submitted, but we need to wait for those formal comments from EAC. On this application specifically.
Yes, I understand that, but we've already done the site visit. We were down there, and if I remember correctly, and Matt maybe can help us here, that's the reason Environmental Advisory Committee didn't give any comment was the fact that there was no plan. And we were saying, well, we need to know. You're going to develop something on the developable area, but nobody knows where that is or what that actually is because there is no plan. There is no actual plan. And basically we felt, I did anyway, that we were being asked to move forward and put this property forward for the change in zoning to help the owner sell it as a developable piece of property. And I don't know that that was, I don't know that that's EAC's role. So maybe Matt can help us here with
clarification. I think one of the through you,
certainly,
Mr. Kerner. I think one of the major concerns of EAC at the time was also the lack of comments from the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority. So at the upcoming meeting on October 18th, I believe it is, we'll be bringing back the comments of the Conservation Authority along with the formula.
I can also just add in addition, obviously at the time you had the environmental impact study, we didn't have the details of the amendment at that time. Obviously the application has just been submitted. So in terms of the environmental aspects of the application, they aren't removing environmental protection areas. They aren't removing environmental conservation areas. So nothing can be developed without that future environmental impact study. So nothing's really changed other than the, as my colleague so eloquently put it, the green is changing to yellow in terms of open space going to urban residential. All the environmental restrictions we have currently in place will remain.
Councilor Liberts.
Yes, thank you very much. So I guess what I'm going to hope for when we do, obviously it's coming back to the Environmental Advisory Committee, and I'm hoping that there'll be something there that we can say, okay, if you're going to have your developable area, we need to know where that developable area is, because that was their concern, because their concern was the buffer zone, and are we going to be asking for a less buffer zone in this area and less and more in that area? That's what we didn't know at the time, and that was, I think that's why we reserved our comments, because it wasn't so much zoning, it was the fact that there wasn't a plan. There was no development plan at all. There was nothing laid out on the property as this is where the lots are going to be, this is where the this is the configuration of the development that will happen. And without that, it was very difficult to comment.
Thank you, Councillor Liberts. Do any other councillors have any questions? Did you want to rebut anything?
Just a very minor point through you to Councillor Liberts. It is a necessary that this isn't a zoning bylaw amendment request. This is an official plan, so it's very high level. What do we think is the most appropriate use for those lands in the future? And it's just a land use decision, not what form should it take, which is the zoning bylaw decision, which will happen at a future time. So basically, we're of an opinion that the appropriate future use of those lands is residential, subject to the fact that it will still have the environmental conservation overlay on that, and that none of the environmental protection lands will be impacted whatsoever.
Thank you, Mr. White. Are there any other councillors who have any questions? Seeing none, are there any other persons that would wish to speak in favor of the official plan amendment change? Seeing none, are there any that would speak in opposition to it? Seeing none, I'll declare this public meeting closed, and I'll turn the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. That takes us to the consent agenda, and we need PDS 65-2017 to be dealt with separately. Is there any other report that anyone wishes removed from the package? Now, could I have a motion then to move the amended package? Councillor Butler, are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the reports? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have a few questions with respect to some of these reports. So if you don't mind, I'm going to start with the DSBN report. And I'd like to ask through you to Mr. Brady, I saw the list of, land uses for this particular, for those two particular public schools. Is it the intent to increase the usage to include adult living and retirement complexes, things of those natures?
Mr. Brady?
We were looking at a range of residential, but certainly those, if the councillor wishes those to be considered, then now's an appropriate time to put them on the table.
Okay, then yes, I'd like to add that to the list, please.
So let's move. You're going to have to move that then. Yep.
Okay, then I'd like to move to amend the report to include adult living retirement complexes.
Any questions or comments about that amendment? All those in favor? That's carried. Continue on, Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moving on to IS 30-2017, the four-way stop. I just wanted to mention that's awesome that you're doing that for Ridgeway, but I had a question with respect to Far Road, in that I understand that the lights are not working on that street. So I know it's not appropriate to add this in
which
this
roads?
Section, but
which
Far
which
Far
lights?
Road, the street lights.
So
are on the corner of that area and leading into Far are not
at
working.
At the corner of Far and South Mill.
One, two.
It's not working, and that's something that's something I believe that we've been dealing with the Canadian Niagara Power on.
Oh, okay.
We can follow that up. That's something that you may want to follow up with Mr. Walsh to make sure that we've got those covered as well.
Thank you. And then IS 31-2017, I see that there are some reductions in speed that have been requested, and I know that you've been working on the Stone Mill area from Nye Road to Dominion, which is densely populated, and that was denied. So I'm just wondering if you could tell us what provokes you to approve a reduction in speed, especially since Nye Road to Dominion on Stone Mill is very densely populated and there are horses on that street as well. So I'm just wondering, in these ones that you have approved for speed reductions, they're not as densely populated.
Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Chair, when we look at the appropriate speed limit for a street, we take a number of technical considerations into account. And through our traffic coordinating committee, we also have members of the police sit on that committee. They provide input as well that goes into a recommended decision by TCC, and that's brought forward to committee here for ratification. In the case of Stone Mill, there is only one small section that we have exceedances in the speed limit, and that's coming off the Garrison. As you travel further south, the speeds of the traveling public decrease, and there's significant compliance. So the police felt that in this case, a reduction in speed limit was not going to do any good in the actual reduction of speeds, and they didn't feel it was a great concern.
Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. So if we beg to differ, especially with consideration of the engineer on staff who recommended that it would be a good idea to move it from 70 to a 60, we as council could probably override that in the future?
The answer to that is yes.
That's all I needed to know. Thank you. And the last question that I have, with your indulgence,
sure,
Your Worship, is not until planning and development. I apologize.
Okay. Councillor Nutton and Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Following up on Councillor Butler's question in regards to IS 31-2017, the reading the report, the factors that were applied to the speed reduction on Town Line Road are similar to those of Point Avenue Road, but yet the Traffic Coordinating Committee refused to lower the speed limit from 80 to 70 on that road, but here on this road they are lowering it. Can you explain the rationale behind that, Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Walt?
With respect to Point Avenue Road, it is a major thoroughfare, and I beg to differ with the councillor on the nature of the road. Point Avenue is an arterial road. Town Line is considered a collector road in our inventory, meaning it has less traffic, lower speeds, etc., as opposed to Point Avenue, where most of the traffic is using it to travel from A to B and not digressing or ingressing into the road. So it serves a different purpose. And again, we took the considerations of the police into account when we make our final recommendation as TCC going forward, and they were not in favor of lowering the speed limits either.
Just in regards, thank you very much, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Walsh, can you cite a couple examples where the police have ever been in favor of a speed limit reduction?
The speed limits contained in this report, they did not have an objection to.
The police? They did say with respect to Town Line Road that it has insufficient volumes and sufficient compliance. So it didn't read as if they were supportive of
it
the
reduction.
It didn't
sound like they were supportive.
They didn't object to the lowering.
Councilor Nutt, sorry to interject.
No, I was going to make that exact point, Your Worship. So, so just some comments on Point Avenue Road. There's a lot of hills and dips. There's a lot of blind spots as you're driving that road. People, I agree, it is a main artery, and people treat it like that. They do travel up near 100 kilometers per hour. There's insufficient enforcement that I've raised at council a number of times. Over the last year and a half, I've been asking the regional councillor, I have emails with Mr. Gale, and I've asked yourself also to go back to the Niagara Regional Police and ask for stepped-up enforcement on this road after there was a serious accident with an elderly lady on this road pulling out of her driveway. So, again, the police say it's a major artery. They know there are speeders, yet they do nothing, and they've done nothing because I've driven that road several times on my way back from Welland coming into town, and they're never there. I never, ever, ever see the police there. Yet, I see them on Sodom Road, Stevensville Road, other roads, Gorham going into Ridgeway. I see them there all the time. They're just not enforcing the speed limit here. So what do we do to ensure that residents are not put at risk? There's no sidewalks. There's deep ditches. The roads in certain spots is in not the greatest shape, so it's not like the driving conditions on this road are ideal for people to be traveling at 100 kilometers per hour. And in the traffic study report, it was shown that there were some excessive speeds on the most recent one, earlier this year, I believe, that came out April, May. Anyways, I'll go back and get the exact date, but those are my comments in regards to this, and either the police need to step it up or we're going to have to do something. And I know that the new chief is being sworn in on October 27th, so I might have to do a pop by to a swearing in and bring this up to him.
I will, Councillor Nutt, I will raise this issue with the local staff sergeant because I do tend to agree with you. I travel Point Avenue Road frequently and don't often see police. Sometimes at Golden Harvest Baptist Church, they're parked. Yeah, that's true enough.
And I'm almost down there.
Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Worship. My question is pertaining to Report PDS 64, 2017, the Spears Garden Phase. And I'm not sure whether I should direct my question to Mr. Brady or Mr. Kernahan. I realize this report's for information purposes with regard to a zoning amendment, but since the traffic has been mentioned on the report, I want to note that I do have great concern with regard to the traffic impact study that was performed in 2015. Recently, my constituents on that road have seen an increase due to the new high school and parents dropping their children off at schools. And I find it hard to believe that this capacity of a subdivision wouldn't even further cause issue with traffic. So I'm just wondering if I realize you said that the traffic impact study was done in 2015, but I'm just wondering if there's any consideration to perhaps having a more recent traffic impact study done.
Mr. Brady?
Thank you to Councillor Zanko. The original one was done in 2015, but when the issue of the of this subdivision was being discussed at the open house, public raised the issue of traffic. And voluntarily, the proponent of this subdivision, the extension, had the traffic study redone. And that's why there was an appendix to it done in 2017. So there was a 2017 appendix done to this particular traffic study, and it's on that basis that it's moving forward. If you'd like, we can send you a copy of that traffic study if that would be of some assistance.
Thank you. I'm not sure how much of assistance that would be, simply because at the time of that traffic impact study, the school wasn't opened, and from my understanding, that traffic impact study was done in the summer months. I could be wrong. However, that's my understanding. So I do wish that it had have been done during this season. And I realize 2017 is quite recent, but it's not recent enough to allow the residents traveling to and from the school to be considered as well. So I'm not sure what the next steps are on that, or maybe you could give me some direction, or perhaps the developers here, and that's something that could be considered. But I certainly do agree with the residents that live on that road. I also travel that road, and I do think it needs to be looked at.
Mr. Brady, we now have 8 additional units being put into this development, and we now have a new high school around the corner. Once the traffic study is completed and it's updated, is there any further latitude for the municipality with respect to that particular issue in terms of this development?
From a staff perspective, we didn't believe that the updated traffic study was required based on the volumes that we've seen in that area, but the developer felt that it was appropriate for them to do the updated traffic study. I think if council wishes to direct the applicant to update the traffic study again with the school open, now would be the time to do that prior to the recommendation report that will be coming in the not too distant future. So if that's an issue of the majority of council, then certainly now is the time to put that on the table and to ask that the study be again updated.
So when we do these, before I go back to Councillor Zanko, because you're going to want to amend the report traffic study, do these traffic studies take into account the fact that there are other developments in the vicinity, so that we're not just going to be dealing with the implications of the traffic that will emanate from this one particular new subdivision, but we're going to be dealing with any other subdivisions that may have traffic coming directly onto Pettit Road, or that will be using Pettit Road. So do we, is there a greater context for these traffic studies?
Traffic studies are supposed to take a look at the context in which they operate, the existing conditions, and also new conditions which are coming on board. But most importantly, they're to focus on the impact of the development that is being proposed. Because what if the traffic study identifies that there needs to be, say, signalization or a turning lane, then the responsibility for that goes to the developer who is identifying that that issue is there. So they tend to concentrate on the impact of their own, but they are to take into consideration all the background.
Right, because Pettit Road is a main thoroughfare into Crescent Park off of the Queen Elizabeth Highway. You come off the Queen Elizabeth Highway at the Gilmore Road exit, and if you're going into Crescent Park, you continue down Pettit Road, and this is the road that many, many people travel on. So that, plus the new subdivision across the street adjacent to the high school behind Green Acres, that's going to add traffic. I do think that it's Councillor Zanko, you have the floor. Did you want to move an amendment to request that the require the developer to do an updated study?
Yes, I do. But before I move that, I just want to clarify, because I want to make sure I'm understanding it. So then once I move this newer traffic impact study will only be in reference to the 7 proposed lots and not necessarily, am I understanding that correctly? Because that wouldn't be, I don't think that would be.
Back to Mr. Brady, can we broaden that?
Including? You certainly can. You can, I would think it would be best for you to ask for what it is that you want to include in that traffic study. And then the developer will either agree to do it, or when the recommendation report comes to council, you will be able to either approve it or not without that traffic study. So what matters that you feel are of importance should be enunciated so that they can be dealt with as part of the traffic study.
Okay, thank you. I would like to move that an updated traffic impact study is performed, and if possible, performed during school year season, during the hours of 8 to, say, 3 p.m., and this should include the entire subdivision, not necessarily just the 7 newly proposed lots.
Phases 1 and 2.
Phases 1 and 2.
Pretty clear on that? Any questions or comments? All those carried. Councillor Zanker, you still have the floor.
Okay. I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Any other councillors? Councillor Lubritz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. On report IS-31, Mr. Walsh, on the Nye Road, from Gorham Road to Highway 3, I remember some of the residents asking for a reduction to 50 kilometers. But when I'm looking at the studies, there was a traffic speed and traffic counts, and they were conducted August 30th to September 6th, and then September 21st to September 27th. And I'm just curious as to why would we do the studies near the end of our season? And, I mean, I grew up in the area, and we have Cherry Hill Golf Course right there. And I would think that the higher volume of traffic on Nye Road would be in the middle of the summer or end of July and August months. Getting into the end of August and the beginning of September, most of the snowbirds or our Buffalo residents anyway have gone back to Buffalo. And so everything slows down. Middle of August, things start to slow down in that area. And was there any reason why there was no study done in the peak, what I consider to be the peak traffic volume months?
Mr. Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor. Generally, the councillor's statement about higher traffic in the summer is correct, but generally, the higher traffic occurs on our north-south roadways and not so much on the east-west. It's getting to and from the garrison in that area that impacts traffic. So I wouldn't suspect that traffic would be substantially different on Nye if we were to do it in the middle of summer rather than the period we did it, that would result in a change in our recommendation.
Councillor Lubritz?
Yes, thank you very much. I understand the rationale between the north-south, because they want to get from Garrison Road to Crystal Beach or Ridgeway or into Thunder Bay area. But given the fact that Cherry Hill Golf Course is right there on Nye Road, I would think that the east-west would be an increase in the summer months, because most of the, I would say a majority of the members at Cherry Hill are coming out of the Crystal Beach area and Point Avenue area, coming up Gorham Road and using Nye Road. So although your general traffic getting to their summer homes might be north and south, but getting around to their recreation would be east and west on Nye Road. And I think hopefully in the future we would consider that when we're doing traffic counts and speed counts, that we would look at peak months even in the east-west direction.
Anything further, Councillor Lubritz? Any other councillors? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Meredith. I just wanted to voice my support for PDS 66, the DSBN Schools Initiation Report. This process worked very well for Roseton a few years ago, and it had two main benefits that I saw to the community. First, it allowed the community to have a direct input and approach to the best use of these lands and what they felt would be most desirable. And secondly, by allowing these properties then to go to markets with a preferred zoning attached, it sold very quickly. And I see the same thing happening with these two parcels of land. If you look elsewhere across Niagara where there have been surplus lands declared with schools sitting on them, they tend to sit vacant for many, many years, leads to vandalism, other issues, maintenance issues. This allows us to make sure that these properties are turned over very quickly. They then become assets to the neighborhood versus eyesores. And I'm proud to say that Fort Erie was the first to take this approach. I know that others are now copying this approach for their municipality. So excited to see this moving forward for two more properties. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other councillors? Mr. Brady, just to go back to PDS 64, this is the Spears Garden Phase 2. I'd been under the impression that we were contemplating that for internal portions of subdivisions, smaller lots would be appropriate and acceptable because we're trying to reach density targets. But on the peripheries, that might not necessarily be appropriate, particularly since they're the transition between an existing established neighborhood and what will be a new neighborhood. This seems to have the smaller lots as the interface with the existing neighborhood. Should I be concerned about that? Should council be concerned about that?
From my perspective, no. The a 40 in terms of 12-meter lot and a 18-meter lot are completely compatible with one another. There's many examples where they're side by each, and there's no real compatibility issues. So from that perspective, I don't see there being a problem. Certainly, there was no one who spoke to that effect this evening. Sometimes when you have townhouses, there are issues when it's an association with large lot singles, but there are certainly a number of examples of those where they're compatible as well. What we do try to do is we try to have townhouses and then smaller and then larger lots as we move away from them. But in this case, this road, particularly with the additional backyards that are being proposed, both in actuality and in the bylaw. So I think that that's a reasonable trade-off in this particular circumstance.
Well, I do take note of the fact that there weren't any residents that raised issue, which I guess somewhat surprising to me, but that's their neighborhood. I did want to have another question. It had to do with IS 32, Maiden's not here, but maybe Mr. Walsh, you can table 2 of that report and comment relative to the payment. So table 2 shows what the costs are going to be, and it also includes the funding that will come from this. So there appears to be far more funding available than costs necessary. That's on page 4 of the report. Do you see that, Mr. Walsh? And then table 3 confirms the project variance. So we've got a surplus of funds. And then I know that the municipality would be responsible for contributing for roadways in the area. But there's a reference immediately below table 4. The favorable variance for this combined project is $170,000, which can be applied to other municipal drainage works as all prior budgeting was for the receipt of the engineer's report containing the cost estimate. That's municipal drainage work on this particular drain, I presume.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, because only the work, only the charges levied to landowners in this municipal drain will be applicable to work on this municipal drain.
Incorrect.
Okay. Thank you very much. So if there are no other questions or comments, I'll call for the vote on the package as amended. Two of the reports were amended. All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. So Councillor Nutt, could you take the chair then to deal with report PDS 65, please?
Yes, Your Worship. Can I have a mover for PDS 65-2017? Thank you, Councillor Zenko. The application for official plan amendment, Thompson Road ES, north of Bowen Road and south of Arcadia. That motion is on the floor as moved by Councillor Zenko. Comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Acting Chair, I'm fully supportive of this. This is something that we have been trying to work through for many, many years now. I remember speaking to this at an AMO conference 7 to 8 years ago, and I'm finally excited to see it gaining some traction, even though at a very preliminary stage, but at least this will set the stage if the recommendation report comes back favorable and council endorses it. That will at least give the developer the opportunity to proceed with the other plans and many, many, many things that they still need to do. So I'm looking forward to getting this to the next stage of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Councillor McDermott?
Yes, just a note that I'd like to thank staff for assisting Mr. White and Mr. Miller on getting us to this point. And I agree with Councillor Passero that this has gone on a good long number of years, and I look forward to finalizing this eventually someday.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That carries. I'll turn the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. Takes us then to Planning and Development Services. And is that you, Councillor Passero?
Yes.
I've got the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now in session. We do not have any presentations or delegations. First report, PDS 59-2017, looking for a mover for proposed zoning bylaw amendment 3601, 3605, 3607, and 3611 Hibbard Street, Willow Trail Townhouses, Ken Gagneau, Upper Canada Consultants, as the agent for 229-8423 Ontario Inc., Wilf Goldlust as the owner, and this is being brought back from the September 5th, 2017 Councilman Committee meeting. Councillor Zenko, you've moved that. So there are recommendations on the floor, and as part of that report, I would like to draw Council's attention as a reminder to a memo that was circulated as part of the agenda, entitled Memo Regarding PDS 59-2017 Additional Information, which also includes some alternatives to the recommendations being proposed in the report. So that report is now on the floor for comments or questions. Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. I noticed in the memo and in the report the reference to the work that was being done regarding the environmental issue, and it talked about the contamination being identified on the north side of Hibbard Street. The only excavation that I recall was on the south side of Hibbard Street. Do we have a record of there being excavation on the north side, or is that an error? Was it actually found on the south side?
I see Mr. Kernahan and Ms. Dolch consulting. Mr. Kernahan is the author of the report. Could you come forward to the podium, please?
Through you, Mr. Chair. My understanding was that the environmental work was conducted on the north side of the street.
Okay, so that's where there used to be a barn, and I don't recall seeing that dug up. I do recall there being excavation on the south side. In any event, there's a reference to a record of site condition currently under review by the ministry. Has that now been completed, the review?
Through you, Mr. Chair, we're still waiting on confirmation from the ministry that that's acceptable to them.
So, Mr. Chair, there's been a lot of excavation going on Hibbard Street over the past couple of weeks. And does that have any connection at all with respect to the record of site condition?
Through you, no.
And are there approvals necessary for a municipal road to be dug up?
Ms. Dolch?
Yes, through you. So what occurred was when we looked at the pre-servicing, the manager of infrastructure services did review the environmental assessment reports and determined that they could go ahead with the roadworks should they want to proceed with the pre-servicing. So he did look at that report, and he was satisfied that there was no contamination on the road allowance portions.
Okay, and so that was a report from whom?
The environmental consultant report, you mean, or?
Is that what it was, a report from the environmental consultant?
Yeah, there was a report from the environmental consultant. It's an environmental site assessment, and it was sent to our manager of infrastructure services, who reviewed that document and confirmed that they could go ahead with the pre-servicing works.
And, Mr. Chair, is that a document that's available to members of council?
Mr. Walsh?
Certainly is.
I'd be interested in looking at that. So just to look at the memo then further, of the options that are, or the alternatives that are referred to, one is one that I had raised at the last meeting, and that is the possibility of not requiring the road widening, and that would resolve at least the issue of parking outside of the garage, which would then eliminate the need to have to do this renovation of the garage door so that it's partially, cars partially in the garage and out of the garage, and now there's no garage definition, et cetera. But then there's a, then there's the issue of there'd be a boulevard which wouldn't be available. So currently what we've got for the road widening would be the boulevard. Here.
Mr. Walsh is confirming that, yes.
And that's a 3-meter strip?
Yes.
Okay. And in that 3-meter strip, then we're going to have trees and sidewalk and the whole gamut?
There'll be no sidewalk.
Just trees?
It'll probably just be grass in that area.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about street trees. We don't necessarily have to worry about parking signage. The Bell infrastructure would be underground there, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And that will be on public property?
Typically, infrastructure such as Bell Communications, sanitary cleanouts, water shutoffs are placed on the public property.
Right. So then the second or the third alternative was reconfigure the road. And again, that would eliminate the current problem with the four townhouses, but apparently would create a wealth of other issues. Looking at the site map that shows these properties, it looks like the parcel on the north side is quite a bit deeper than the parcel on the south side. So exactly what there's a suggestion as well that there may be some zoning issues. Do we know what those zoning issues would be at this point?
Mr. Brady?
It would likely be that the backyards wouldn't meet the bylaw.
So there'd have to be a minor variance.
Or a zoning bylaw amendment, depending upon the degree.
And there's also a reference in this memo to stormwater management infrastructure, which apparently would be part of the drainage plan.
It is, plus in this case, I believe it's oversized pipes which are being put in place.
Why would they have to be oversized?
And that's one method for dealing with stormwater management rather than a pond.
I see. So they're oversized. They're oversized pipes now.
Well, that's the current plan.
And would those pipes be on municipal property or on the private property?
They're typically, again, on municipal property. They can be on private property, but they're typically on municipal property.
Okay. So I see on this Appendix 1 to the report what looks like a little jag in Hibbard, referred to in under Alternative 3 as a curve in the street. Very nominal right now, but certainly if you move the road north, there would be a bit of a bend in the road. And then there's a reference to significant costs that the developer might have to incur for a variety of things. Do we have any handle on what those costs might be at this stage?
I could estimate them for you, but the cost would be to redesign the road and the sanitary and all the mains associated with it, probably in the neighborhood of $30,000 to $50,000.
So right now, the
Mayor Redekop, can I just ask one follow-up question? Sure. It also says in that sentence, Mr. Brady would be subject to, as well, further planning approvals. Could you shed some light onto what that would entail?
It may be subject to further planning approvals, depending upon the associated setbacks for the townhouses on the north side, so that if it reconfigured the road, put the townhouses in a different location, there may be a necessity to deal with the setbacks, and I believe in this case it means the rear yard setbacks.
Okay.
So right now the street is completely torn up. There are great big holes in the where the laterals are being put into the not only the existing buildings but for the new block to the west on the south side. And I would have thought this would be a perfect time if there were going to be things that needed to be moved, this would have been a perfect time to do that. Have we had any consultation with the developer with respect to that possibility, knowing somewhat what was at least in one member of council's head about how to resolve this problem?
The design for that particular section of water main and road has been approved by this council, and the developer is putting it in place. The timing is unfortunate, I agree, but the developer, I mean, he can speak for himself, but I believe they wanted to get on with the project.
Well, I understand that. I understand that time is money, and I understand that there's a longstanding problem with this particular parcel. From my perspective, the difficulty here is that we were handed a situation as a council and presumably dealt with by the previous council in the fairest way that they felt they could deal with it, fair to the developer and trying to be fair to the residents. And the planning staff made a determination as to where they thought they could go in terms of permitting parking on this block of four units. Now a new owner is presenting us with a request to basically undo the solution that the previous council dealt with. And I must say that I find it an unusual proposal to resolve the situation. You're going to give up a garage so you can have an exterior parking spot by changing the garage doors. I don't know how marketable that is. I don't know that I would buy it. I would think that people that buy these units may have smaller vehicles to begin with, but I don't know that. So I'm, on the one hand, not wanting to create more problems for the current owner, but we didn't create the problem. The purchaser, the new owner, knew of the problem and was aware of what some of the possibilities could be after Councillor Butler and I met with him a few months ago. So that I'm feeling like this is one of those situations where you've got a square peg and you're trying to hammer it into a round hole. And I don't think that I want to do that. I'm thinking that the best solution here is maybe not request the road widening. I mentioned this before. If we don't have the road widening, I don't see Hibbard ever being widened in any event. It's never going to be widened at the west end because there are buildings that restrict any widening. I don't think it needs to be a particularly wide road. It's a nice little laneway. That's what it is. Why not keep it as a laneway? If we don't require the road widening, that solves a problem. If there's a real need for some type of additional visible services, escaping, sewer cleanouts, whatever, then shift the road a bit to the north, a couple of feet, 3 feet. I'm thinking maybe I'm naive in thinking that you can't shift a road that you've torn up, and maybe there are underground infrastructure issues here that I'm not fully appreciating, but I'm trying to work my way through a common sense solution to a problem. One that's not going to cost the developer a pile of money on the one hand, on the other hand, isn't going to create problems for the neighborhood and isn't going to leave us in a situation where we don't look like we know what we're doing. So I'm thinking that the solution lies someplace between a mix of alternative 2 and 3. And before I do anything further, I'm happy to hear what other counselors may have to say. They may think I'm completely out to lunch as opposed to partially, but that's where I am.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm a little confused under alternative 2 in the last portion of it, last two sentences. It says the widening is required to provide for a boulevard which provides space for sanitary cleanouts and water shutoffs. And I'll take you through my thoughts. If you have a 66-foot road allowance, that gives you 33 feet on each side. But if I only use 30 feet, then how does that interfere with, number one, your sanitary cleanout? Because on my property, the sanitary cleanout is in my yard. And in my property, the water shutoff is in my yard. It's not on the road. It's not in the boulevard. So if we didn't widen the road, I want to know, how does that interfere with the sanitary cleanout and the water shutoff?
Mr. Brady, could you just clarify what we're speaking out when we use the term boulevard?
Certainly. There's a couple of things, but I'll get to that as well. We don't have 66 feet here. The reason that we asked for the road widening is because this road is undersized. And even with the additional room that's being required, it won't be a 66-foot wide road allowance. From time to time, there are cleanouts and those kinds of infrastructure which appear to be in front yards. Those front yards are within the road allowance. So a road allowance of a municipality will often go beyond the sidewalk towards the house. And that's where you'll find those apertures often located. So the reason for this boulevard is to provide for a location for sanitary cleanouts, water shutoffs, telecommunications infrastructure, those kinds of things. And that makes it easier in terms of infrastructure services, both in terms of installation and in terms of maintenance into the future. I think I answered the question, but if not,
Councilor Lubberts.
I understand all that. So what you're saying now is the road allowance that's there, if we don't widen the road, then the sanitary cleanouts and the water shutoffs would be on private property?
No, they're going to have to. We're going to have to try to come up with a different solution for that. And I'm not exactly sure what that solution would be. It would require a redesign of those devices moving forward.
I don't get the redesign. Is it
currently the area where those are to be located is in the land that we're taking. If we don't take that land and it's no longer public land, then they'll have to be located someplace else.
And could that not be relocated in those places where they're going to be? I mean, if we widen the road, then you're going to put the clean out where it's going anyway, and you're going to put the water where it's going anywhere. It's just going to be on public property. If we don't widen the road, it'll be on private property, but can we not get an easement and not widen the road? Now we have easements so that the town can get to the shutoffs and to the clean outs. We have easements on a regular basis, and then the development can go forward. They got parking. And the only thing they have to give up is an easement on these four pieces of property.
Mr. Brady?
I'm not sure that it can work quite that easily, but certainly if council determines that alternative 2 and directs staff to do alternative 2 and at the same time turns down the zoning bylaw amendment in front of you, we will have to come up with some method of doing that, or the developer will have difficulties moving forward.
Well, I think, the mayor has already talked about maybe not doing the road widening, and we're trying to come up with some kind of a solution and some kind of compromise. I think maybe that's what we need to do, is discuss this with the developer and see if they're willing to provide easements on the properties so that these things can be placed on private property. And like the mayor said, this isn't our problem. This is a problem that we're trying to help the developer solve. And so I guess it might have to go back and forth. But to me, from what I'm hearing and the way I'm understanding this, the only reason we're doing the road widening is so that when we place the water shutoffs where they're going and we place the sanitary cleanouts where they're going, they will be on public property. They won't be on the road. They'll just be on public property. And I don't personally have a problem with them being on private property and an easement, because I don't know anybody in this council chambers that doesn't have their sanitary cleanouts and their water shutoffs on their front yard. It might be on the road allowance, but that's your front yard that you cut your grass and all the other stuff, and it doesn't affect anything. The only difference would be that there would be an easement for the town to get at them and have access to them. So I think that that's something that we might want to consider. I think maybe staff could talk to the developers. Let's see if we can come up with some kind of solution that way.
Mr. Brady, how much time would be required to have those conversations with the developer, infrastructure services, put something together for council's consideration as to what this might look like, as well as include legislative services in the mix from a legal point of view as to what would be required to make that vision happen?
First of all, we have discussed with the developer, and the developer has provided to council a letter dated September 29th, and in that letter it's clearly in support of the zoning bylaw amendment as opposed to any of the alternatives. So that discussion did occur. If council wants to direct the zoning bylaw amendment to be turned down and to direct staff to not take the road widening, we'll have to sit down with the developer and try to make that work. But I'm not sure what we'll come back with at that point.
Okay. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Chair Pissarro. So when the mayor and I met with the developers, it seemed a little simpler than it is presenting itself to be right at this point. And I think there's too many unanswered questions, and I do think that we need to get some answers and really have a further discussion on this. Having driven down Hibbard Street, it is a laneway. It's very difficult to have two passing cars at one time. One car is always veering, allowing the other car to go through. You know, there's residents that are having problems with this particular development because of these four homes. And I know that you're in a situation that needs to be rectified. But I'm of the mind, again, to postpone this one more time to get more answers and have a little bit further discussion. I don't know that it's in the best interest of anybody here to try to piecemeal everything together and take a little bit from two, a little bit from three, or a little bit from one, and a little bit from four. I think we have to make an intelligent decision, and I think we have to weigh out all the consequences, and I'm not prepared to do that tonight.
Well, having heard that, and I don't know how we can do this by consensus, but am I hearing that I'm trying to gauge if there's a consensus on council to proceed with the zoning bylaw amendment at all, or is everybody not in favor of that and we're now looking at alternatives? Councillor Nutt? Sure. No, she hasn't moved. She said that's what she's leaning towards. We can direct staff if, you know, we go through to the end on this and Councillor Butler wants to postpone. I'd just be looking for some type of direction to staff. And, of course, those conversations carry a little more leverage if council makes a decision. You can always reconsider at another time if the information comes back not to your liking, but we'd like to move this along at some point. No, I'm just trying to gauge through comments whether or not there's nobody in favor of the zoning bylaw amendment. Councillor Lubert, you've already spoke once. I'm just looking to Councillor Nutter, Councillor McDermott for any comments. Councillor McDermott?
Well, I'm willing to support Councillor Butler's, if that's what she puts forward.
Councillor Nutt, anything?
As things stand now, I'm not really in a position to support. I think there's things that we need to look at and consider. And I'd like the answers to the constituent concerns, to the public comments made at the September 5th meeting to be perhaps circulated to some of the residents, not knowing that answers were, I mean, there are just a lot of questions. I'm leaning towards postponing because right now, if we're forced to vote, I don't think I could support this as it stands right now.
Okay. We'll go back to Councillor Lubert.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. If someone brings forward a motion to postpone, I would definitely support that. I understand what Mr. Brady is saying about the developer wanting to go forward with the amendment, but I don't know that we have to treat this as a time-sensitive issue. This is a problem. This is something that needs to be taken care of, and it needs to be taken care of so that all parties are happy. And there's going to be some things that may not seem to be right when we come up with the final solution, because the project isn't right to begin with. It wasn't built right to start with, and no matter what we do, it's not going to be right. But at least we're going to at least accommodate somebody. We can allow the consumer that purchases these properties, right, to at least park his car in the driveway or park it in the garage, whichever way they want to do it. They're not restricted as to how they can park their car. I don't know that I would want to be in that position. And I find it very likely that a future owner will not even know that that restriction is in place. And I don't know that we want to put ourselves in the position that it's because we wouldn't postpone it for a little bit longer or to, you know, think about it more, or go back to the developer and ask him, are you willing to have some kind of easement or do something different? So
the only
motion comes forward, I'll support it.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. The only issue that would be time sensitive is the fact that the developer is working with the road schematic approved by council. They're working towards completion of that now. So if we were to pursue something other than that, Mayor Redekamp?
I don't know if that's completely correct. I get the impression that they're doing underground servicing of those. I don't think they're working on the road. They're putting it back, but they're not building the road.
No, but the pre-servicing of the units, and to Mr. Brady's points, if we were to go with anything other than what's on the floor now, it would involve a redesign and could potentially impact further things.
Well,
I don't want to say down the road.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll make it easy. I'm not going to support the recommendation. I'll not support the recommendation. I don't think it makes any sense, and it doesn't solve the problem. So to the extent that the developer's here and the developer's consultant, you've heard what I've had to say. I'm looking at a solution that's going to try to accommodate you to the extent that we can on the one hand. On the other hand, not end up with a development that we're going to be embarrassed about in the future because it sets a tone, and this type of thing speaks to the whole community. People not just in Ridgeway see this. People all over the place have seen this since it was put in. They can't understand why the town would have permitted it to go forward. I'm not about to exacerbate the problem on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't want to do further harm. So I'm thinking that we don't need the additional road widening. But what does that mean? And how are we going to make sure that the residents are accommodated, however we can do that? There won't be on-street parking. I mean, this memo talks about on-street parking on Hibbert Street. That's never going to happen. Hibbert isn't wide enough now. And if we're talking about Ridge Road North, well, that's a bit of a hike. So for some people, they may park on Ridge Road North, or they may park in the parking lot where the market is, alongside trail sides. But it's a parking issue that needs to be dealt with. So I can't be any clearer than that as to where I am on.
Okay. And those parking alternatives are not fair to the commercial businesses or users to have those used up. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. The homes that were built on Hibbert, the four existing ones, are not or were not built by this current developer. And this current developer has done a phenomenal job in trying to accommodate and do the right thing in this development. So I wanted to make that clear. I also wanted to clarify as well to Councillor Lubert's point with respect to home owners, perhaps if they purchase that not knowing the situation. I have friends who have contacted the developer who are interested in purchasing a couple of those homes, and they have been forthright with them. So I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that they have been honest from the get-go and that they are informing potential buyers that that is the case. So just wanted to clarify that as well. I would like to postpone this for at least 2 weeks. That will give us ample time to actually talk back and forth and to visit the site, to actually go out there hopefully with Mr. Brady and take a good look at what the recommendations are and what the solutions potentially are so that we actually understand what's going on here, because it's very difficult to get a report on a Wednesday, Thursday, mull through it over the weekend and to thoroughly digest it and understand what the intent is. So I think if we were to visit those sites, have some discussions, what will work for all parties involved, especially for the residents that are living on that street and those that partake in activities in the Ridgeway Core, especially during the farmers market, because there is traffic on that street. There is absolutely no doubt. So we have to be fair to everybody involved. I move to postpone it for 2 weeks so that we can have further discussion.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Just regarding the timing then, Mr. Brady, do you see that as adequate time to consult with the parties with a focus on, from what we heard tonight, an emphasis on full ramifications pursuant to alternative number two?
Actually, I don't. The reason being is that I'm away for the rest of this week, and clearly you want me to participate in this in some fashion. So, if I could get clarification, we can certainly sit down and discuss this with the developers, which we have on several occasions, but it would appear that members of council want to participate in those discussions. Could I get clarification on that?
Mayor Redekop, Councillor Butler, would you like to be first-hand parties to these conversations?
If it helps.
So that's yes, Mr. Brady.
Oh, fair enough. So we'll probably try to set up a meeting, not this week, but next week, that will involve, I'll invite all members of council to that meeting, and I'll invite the developer to that meeting, and we can go from there. But I don't believe it'll be back in 2 weeks, because if we have that meeting, not this week, but next week, then there's something that will result from that discussion, and I would think it would be more likely that it will come back in about a month.
So that would take us to November 6th. Mayor Redekop?
I wonder if is October the 23rd doable? That's 3 weeks. That would provide a meeting next week and a further week or a bit more to put something together for council. I don't want to rush it, but if that helps at all, we could have a council and committee meeting during the regular council meeting.
We can attempt to do that. It's just that the clerk's department want things well in advance to get out to the councillors, and my staff can only get things done so quickly. So we can try for the 23rd, but I think it's more likely to be in November.
Councillor Butler, I will put that timing issue in your court. What would you like to do?
I want to be fair to all parties, but it's already been postponed once. I don't want to cause too much of a delay for the developers. So I think we should aim for the 23rd. If it's not doable, then we move it to November 6th. But the intent should be the 23rd.
Okay. So for the record, then, the motion is to postpone until October 23rd, with the knowledge that if a memo from staff comes forward, it will still come back on the 23rd, but and then we'll have to further postpone based on the information we have. Further comments or questions regarding the timing of that? Seeing none, all in favor of postponement to October 23rd, that is carried.
P-2016-0.
PDS 68, 2017, implementation of Town of Fort Erie waterfront strategy. If I could have a mover for that. Thank you, Mayor Redekop. I'd like to introduce our new senior community planner, Ms. Lindsay Richardson, and ask her if she could come to the podium as the author of this report. Some background information. She started as the senior community planner on September 11th. She has over 11 years municipal planning experience and comes to us from the city of Port Colborne, where she was a community and policy planner. She'll be responsible for management of the town's official plan, heritage planning, brownfields, and implementation of the waterfront strategy. She'll also be working with the Municipal Heritage Standing Committee and the Communities in Bloom Committee. On behalf of council, welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And usually council doesn't take it easy for your first report, so we'll see if that bodes true tonight. Waterfront strategy, comments or questions from members of council? Mayor Redekop.
So I'll start with a beach ball. That I thought the report was very good, and I'm very pleased to meet you. I didn't realize we had Lindsay Richardson on staff until I read the report. So I don't know where you've been hiding, but welcome to the town of Fort Erie. I thought it was a very good report, and I think it envisages what we're trying to accomplish. I like the idea that we've set up the short, long, and or short, medium, and long-term objectives, and I think this falls in line with council's philosophy to date with respect to this issue. So thank you very much for a very good report.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Further comments or questions? Seeing none, easy peasy. All in favor? That's carried.
It gets harder.
New business or inquiries. We have one up on the agenda, a memorandum from Kira Dolch, Associate Director, Planning and Development Services, and it's a memo regarding the results, feedback, and staff initiatives pursuant to the Developers Roundtable. Comments or questions regarding Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say it was a really good report, and thank you. I was really happy to see that you ended up doing the roundtable. I wanted to be present. Unfortunately, I couldn't be that day, but it did solidify some of the things that we already had spoken about and were on track for, I think. Thank you.
Anything further to that memo? Seeing none, further items of new business inquiries for Community and Development Services? Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to just comment on comments from Councillor Butler regarding the sales of those units on Hibbard Street. I wasn't referring to the developer not telling the people that the restrictions on parking, because obviously that's part of the purchase sale agreement. But future owners, second and third owners, that the developer has nothing to do with. That's where my concern is regarding the new people not knowing that there's any restrictions, and then all of a sudden after they purchase the property, bingo, they start getting phone calls from the town saying that, you know, you can't park your car in your driveway. And that's what I was referring to.
Thank you, Councillor Rivers. I don't think there was any other inference mentioned. Mayor Redekop?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, I believe that's supposed to be in the subdivision agreement, is it not? Yeah, okay, so that'll be on title.
Councillor Nutt.
I don't think it would be on title. Purchase and sale agreement.
It's also going to be in the subdivision agreement, which is registered on title. That's the only way future owners would tune in on it.
Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Passero. Just under new business inquiries, there was an article that was published in the Post this past Thursday that had some inaccuracies. I'd just like to clarify on the record that the constituents that I spoke of are not developers. They're just two personal constituents that were building buildings for their own use on their own property, have no interest in developing anything else. And they had come to me because it was a shock, the amount of development charges. And I just want to, I don't want anybody to assume that they were developers, because I certainly did not use that word. I used the word my constituents, and the amount quoted in the paper was also wrong. It was closer to $100,000, not $30,000 as it was reported. So it was a much larger issue in my mind for my constituents than appeared in the paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Anything further? Seeing none, business status reports. comments or questions? Seeing none there, that will close Planning and Development Services. I'll turn the chair back to Mayor Redicom.
Thank you very much, Councillor Passero. That then takes us to Corporate and Community Services, Councillor Knight.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Welcome.
Corporate and Community Services is now in session. Presentations and delegations tonight. I'd like to welcome Jane to the podium to introduce our delegation tonight.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Jane Davies. I'm the Manager of Museum and Cultural Services. CN6218 was acquired by the Town of Fort Erie in 1973 based upon an agreement between CN and the Town. Since then, nearly $90,000 has been spent on the engine, but there is still much work to be done. The most recent action plan was the 2009 strategy endorsed by Council, based upon a revenue stream of fundraising and a federal grant, and based on recommendations from a professional conservator. In order to qualify for this grant, no work could begin on the project. Therefore, the major repairs were deferred while the fundraising campaign was underway. This grant is no longer available, which makes the 2009 strategy no longer viable. Last year, Council adopted report COS-07-2016, which recommended hiring a consultant to identify options for the future of the engine and caboose. That RFP was awarded in May of this year to Maltby & Associates, Inc. And at this time, I would like to introduce you to Susan Maltby.
Thank you. Good evening, Ms. Maltby.
Good evening. Just give me a minute to do this technical thing.
Absolutely. Take as much time as you
need. Thoughts are IT people.
I'm sure Councillor Passero can assist you.
No, it's not. No.
But he can look at pictures. It's fixed. He fixed it.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. Good evening. As Jane said, my name is Susan Maltby. I'm an objects conservator in private practice in Toronto and the founder and CEO of Maltby & Associates, Inc. The 6218 has been part of my professional life since 1999. At that time, I was hired by the Fort Erie Railway Museum to undertake a condition assessment of the 6218 and tender and recommend how it could be stabilized and preserved. The 6218 is a large artifact in an uncontrolled environment. Since 1999, the approach was that it is a museum artifact to be preserved instead of being restored to its original working condition. I teach preventive conservation in the museum, Master of Museum Studies program at the University of Toronto and in the University of Victoria's Cultural Resource Management program. I also have considerable experience working with municipalities preserving public art and artifacts, including Oakville's steam flywheel, which you see here, Hamilton's Gore Park Fountain, Moulton CF-100, Markham Museum's historic rail car, the Acadia. And here you can see the interior of the Acadia. It's remarkably intact, including a number of the original fixtures. The focus of the CN6218 and caboose study was not a referendum on how or whether to fix the train and caboose. The focus of the study was to identify, investigate, analyze, and propose options for the future of these two assets in order to assist Council in deciding upon a course of action. A history of CN6218 and the caboose, as well as condition assessments, are included in the study. Consultation with industry professionals included discussions with conservators, curators, and railway enthusiasts who have experience with preserving rail heritage. They include representatives from the Canada Science and Technology Museum, Dune Heritage Crossroads, Expo Rail, the City of Kingston, Canadian Conservation Institute, Guelph Museums, the Toronto Locomotive Preservation Inc., Steamtown National Historic Site, and the New England Steam Corporation. Community public input was sought through meetings with identified stakeholder groups. Public input was solicited through the Town of Fort Erie's website and social media platforms. A story about this process was in the Fort Erie Times. Questionnaires were distributed at the Fort Erie Historical Museum and the Fort Erie Railway Museum. And a public open house was held here at Town Hall. We heard from people with passionate opinions representing all sides of this issue. All involved in the consultation process were asked to respond to the following six questions. One, what is your vision of the future, for the future of the 6218 and caboose? Two, How much do you think this vision will cost? 3, do you have a budget for this vision? 4, can you suggest any potential funding sources to support this vision? 5, how would you implement this vision? And finally, do you have any comparable experience? There were 20 submissions received during this process. It was clear that there were overlaps and shared visions amongst the submissions. As a result, the 20 submissions were distilled down to 10 distinct options. 7 risk criteria were identified and used to assess each option. These were cost estimate, human resources, municipal policies and practices, industry standards, cost savings, impact on the Fort Erie Railway Museum, and finally, impact on the 6218 and the caboose. These risks were defined within the study and the criteria identified as to what would consist a low risk, a medium risk, or a high risk. These risks were then applied to each of the 10 options. A summary of those options and their associated risks are included in the study. The options were, 1, restore and operate, i.e. a running locomotive, using volunteers at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 2, restore and fence using volunteers at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 3, repair and protect using volunteers at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 4, repair and protect at the Niagara Railway Museum. 5, repair and protect at the Alberta Railway Museum. 6, fundraise, repair, and protect at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 7, repair and protect at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 8, repair and protect in stages at the Fort Erie Railway Museum. 9, defer the decision. And 10, dispose of the assets. The results of this risk analysis were summarized in a chart developed to provide a one-page visual summary of the 10 options and their associated risks, with red boxes denoting a high risk, yellow a medium risk, and green a low risk. Funding opportunities were investigated through consultation with representatives from federal and provincial granting agencies. Unfortunately, at this juncture, there are no grants available at either level. Foundation grants were also investigated, and there appears to be no viable options within that sector. The study also includes a section on lessons learned from municipalities and organizations who have undertaken similar projects. In conclusion, this study recommends option number 8, a staged approach using qualified professionals to repair and protect CN6218. Such actions would fulfill the 1973 agreement between CN and the town of Fort Erie, whereby the town agreed to, quote, they agreed that the locomotive would be kept in a clean, attractive condition at all times, that adequate protection would be provided to minimize vandalism, and that a suitable roof would be erected to provide overhead protection, close quote. This recommendation is supported by the formal risk assessment conducted as part of the study, as it was the option with the lowest overall risk. Option number 8 also recommends disposition of the caboose, replacing it with local maintenance of way railway equipment currently stored in the Mentholatum building. Option number 8 divides the project into 3 stages, the first stage being mandatory remediation, and this includes removing the boiler jacketing and the fiberglass, containing any remaining asbestos, cleaning out the smoke box, abating lead-based paint, minor repairs, monitoring the track bed and painting. The second stage, protection from the elements. And finally, the third stage, cosmetic reconstruction of the locomotive's jacketing. The anticipated expenses are as follows. Stage 1, approximately $72,000. 2, approximately $35,000. Stage 3, approximately $400,000. Existing funds in the 6218 capital accounts would cover the expenses related to Stage 1. Dividing the project into stages would preserve the possibility of applying for grants should they become available in the future. If Council chooses not to stage the project over several years, option number 6 and option number 7 also use qualified professionals to produce the same results for the engine as option number 8. It should be noted that option number 6 would require hiring a fundraiser and providing a fundraising budget, and option number 7 would require the town to fund the entire project now. If any councillor would like a hard copy of this study, please contact Museum Services. I understand the public input will be collected during the month of October, and this issue will be brought forward at the end of November, at the November Council meeting for deliberation. If any questions arise during the next couple of weeks, please direct them to Museum Services, and I will respond. If you have any questions at this time, I'd be pleased to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Moltby. I will open up the floor for any councillors who wish to comment or question. I have questions for Ms. Moltby. Your Worship.
I'll make a comment first. I really appreciated the report. It was very interesting, and some of the historical aspects were quite interesting, and I liked the process that you went through. Ms. Davies indicated to me before I saw the report that I would like it. I do like it. I have one caveat. The caveat relates to the caboose, and I'm one of those people that likes to think you can have it all. So, you know, the phasing, I'm thinking that if we were to phase this in and accept your recommendation, you know, maybe there's a possibility that we could find something, because the caboose does also represent a part of the railroading life, and a different aspect than what the engineers were doing up at the front or the people operating the engine. In any event, you mentioned, you did reiterate just now the essence of the agreement between the town and CN,
yes,
which talked about also providing adequate protection to minimize vandalism. And that was on page 4 of your report. And on page 43 of your report, and I think in some other locations when you were talking about one aspect of the risk assessment, you mentioned that the municipality has a policy of removing fences from properties. And I found that interesting because we have a number of parks that have fences, probably because of safety reasons, the ball diamonds, the tennis courts, the beach, I guess, to keep people out. So I found that quite interesting, because I think that trying to preserve and protect an artifact is also a sound policy reason for putting up fencing, although I know the fencing just recently came down and the vandalism probably went up. Any event, I'm sorry, no question, just comments.
That's okay.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Don't you? Yeah, I don't do that. I've seen that done, yeah.
Do any other members of council have any comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Moltby.
Thank you kindly.
Moving on to 9.2 reports. Can I have a mover for COS 05-2017? His Worship has moved the report for CN6218 steam engine and caboose study, recommending the council receive for information purposes report number COS 05-2017 and the attached CN6218 steam engine and caboose study. That report is on the floor for comment or question. Members of council. Councillor Passera.
Thank you. I'm not going to prejudge any of the community consultation for scenarios 1 through 8, but I will say now that I definitely would never vote for scenario 9 or scenario number 10. I think this is in our court. It has been delayed long enough. I think this is a very well put together presentation that outlines a number of options. I'm certain that we can find one or slight combinations to finally get this taken care of. This is very important to our heritage, and I think it's incumbent upon us to see this through. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Councillor Passero wholeheartedly.
Chair recognizes Councillor McDermott.
I am grateful for the report. I'm hoping that we can, manage to start something relatively soon down the line. The CN has such a history in this community, and although many of them have gone by the wayside, I think our history as a railway town is something that should be preserved. It's always unfortunate when people before us make agreements that they don't keep. And unfortunately, then there's some council that's going to sit here and have to make that decision, be responsible. So I don't understand why councils previous to us didn't take that aspect, protecting that asset, better than they did. I don't know why these things go by the wayside, but it's certainly doesn't leave a good impression to people that want to visit that engine and see how it's deteriorated. So while it's very embarrassing to our community, I think we have to do what we can to make things better, and I'm hoping in the long run we're going to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. Any other councillors? I just have a question for the fire chief, and we don't always build fire halls, but when we do, we build them in front of artifacts. Do you know if there are any externally facing cameras and what the level of activity is at the fire hall that may discourage vandalism to this asset?
I can't tell if it's on or not. There is a rear-facing camera there that points to the train. I couldn't tell you the level of attendance or how much that park is used. I will say this, whenever I'm there or have been there since my tenure began, which is like 3 minutes ago, but there is always someone there in that area looking, heading to either Sugar Bowl or heading to the train. That I could say in the short amount of time, but it is being, there is security there and there is a camera there.
Thank you very much. Ms. Davies, you had a comment on that?
Yes, further to that, Councillor Nutt, the cameras face to the west side of the train, and we have asked about getting cameras facing on the east side of the train, and IT has told us there's not enough digital cable, and it would be very costly to get the digital cable to have the cameras pointing that way. So that's why right now they're just pointing on the west side of the train.
That's interesting that they talk about not the length of digital cable when we live in really an unplugged and wireless society. So I know for a fact that there are wireless IP cameras that we could look into, and maybe Mr. Cookett would be kind enough to take that back to Mr. Davis for us. Councillor Passer?
Yeah, in that vein, I just wanted to speak to the fencing issue because it was a topic that was debated heavily on both sides through the construction of Central Fire Station. And what was happening was there's always been vandalism and thefts and break-ins associated with 6218. And one of the big difficulties was you had the entire perimeter fenced. A common phrase is locks are for the curious. They're not for the dishonest. So people were still climbing fences but getting in behind the train, doing their damage. None of the honest people could really walk around and see what was going on. And what we have found, and with the removal of the fence, is now you have passive surveillance of the honest people, which I like to think are 99% of the population, are in the front, to the sides, and around to the back. Now, does that help in the evening when the honest people are at home watching Seinfeld reruns? No, it doesn't. And that goes to your point about the cameras and other security measures. But that was the background as far as why the fencing is removed. It's to increase the passive surveillance of the good citizens to count down on the stuff that was happening in behind the train where they were just jumping the fence anyways.
Thank you, Councillor Passero. Any other comments or questions? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just a question on our chart. The risk, there's lows and highs, 4 and 5. Would that be right? Yeah. But why would the Alberta Railroad Museum be low and the Niagara Railroad Museum be high and medium? I guess the first three on cost, human resources, and cost savings. The Alberta Railroad Museum scores a very low risk.
Yes.
Why would that be?
They were offering to do all of the fundraising to move the train out west, to repair the train, and if they raised enough money to restore it and operate it. So it was going to cost the municipality nothing. So it was a very low financial risk.
And then it would be brought back to Fort Erie?
No, they would run it at their site. The 6218 did run through Edmonton, so they also have a history and a connection to the train.
Well, so
that's why they showed interest.
So for our interest, that would be right off the table.
That's why you see a high risk on impact to the Fort Erie Railroad Museum, because the train would be leaving the site. So it would have a negative or a higher risk there.
So you and Ms. Malpe, you're the experts in this. you guys know more about this than we do. Where are you leaning? What line are you leaning towards? Where would you like to see us go? Because we need to work on this. We need to get there.
Yes. If you turn to the end of the study, there is a recommendation from Susan Maltby on page 58, and she's recommending option 8, which is a staged approach to repairing and protecting the train at the Fort Erie Railroad Museum.
And do we have a time frame on all the stages when it would be completed? Did we have that?
Well, right now there is enough money in the 6218 capital fund to do stage 1. So this will be debated at the November 6th council meeting. You'll have an opportunity to deliberate and give direction to staff as to what option you would like us to pursue. If you choose option 8, we will do a capital budget sheet for stage 1 using the existing funds in the capital reserve account for 2018. If you choose option 6 or 7, then you would direct staff to prepare a capital budget sheet for the entire cost, which is approximately, you know, close to $500,000. But whatever council deliberates and decides, that's the capital budget sheets we'll put forward.
But so option 8, the staged report plan, would be dependent on how generous council is to stage 2 and 3, and mm-hmm. how many stages you think there would be, and would there be like an estimated timeline? You would say 4 years, 5 years, three years?
It all depends on how much money's put towards the project.
Yes, I understand that, but Ms. Maltby, what would you like to see? 3 years, 4 years?
I would like to see stage 1 done yesterday.
Excuse me, can I just ask you to come to the podium, please? Thank you.
To me.
That's okay. It's just that we're recording and for those listening at home.
Yeah. I would like to see the stage 1 done, absolutely, because that's the best thing for the locomotive. Right. And after that, it buys us time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to have seen it done 10 years ago. So, but the stage 1 within a year, and then we've bought some time. Because
it'll be stable.
Yeah, it'll be stable. The jacketing and the fiberglass that are holding water next to the boiler will be gone. So we'll be able to assess the condition of the boiler, and we'll be able to paint it. And paint is one of the best things to protect it because it's outside.
I understand that, but when we get this report and we start deliberating, we're going to say, okay, let's go with the staged plan. But then where are we? Is it a 5-year plan, 6-year plan? Would you like to see a 3-year plan, or would you be satisfied with a 5-year plan to get it done? I know I'm putting you in a spot, but I'm looking at something that I can bring forward when it comes forward.
We will stage the plan according to how much money council puts towards it. So stage 1 you can do right now based on the money that's in the account. Stage 2 would take a little bit more to get the roof over top of it, mm-hmm. Which could not happen in 2018 anyway because we need 1 year of an engineering study on the track because
so
the track is tilting.
A 4 or 5 year plan would probably fit within the recommendations.
But it could be longer.
It could be longer because at that point the engine is stable.
Yep.
So you can stage that according to your financial
needs.
Yeah,
well, listening to what I'm hearing from other counselors, the sooner the better. So I think three to 5 years would be fine, I think, right? Hopefully we can, or 4 years. So that gives me an idea where we're, okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you very much, ladies.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Councillor Butler? Oh, okay. So seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor of COS 05-2017? That passes. None opposed. I'll move the chair back to his worship. I know you have an item of new business, Councillor Butler, and I mean, if we're okay, can we hear the new item of new business under corporate services at this time, although there is no inquiry?
Yeah, so I move that we waive the rules so we can deal with it.
Okay. So all those in favor of waiving the rules? None opposed? That carries. The chair recognizes Councilor Butler for her item of new business.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. I was in conversation with a constituent, and he was listening to the audio with respect to licensing cottage rentals, and he asked me if I wouldn't mind asking the fire chief a question or two with respect to that. And with your indulgence, I'd like to ask our chief whether or not you would have to speak with the Ontario Fire, to find out whether or not the fire code requires anything for licensing cottages other than rentals for families or for individuals. And once it gets larger, does it become a fire hazard situation?
Chief?
Through you, Mr. Chair. The fire code speaks to the care and maintenance of a building and its fire systems. So the building code says how you have to build it, how the drywall has to be, the burn through times, all those things. The fire code says what the powers of the fire chief are, what the powers of investigators are, and what people must do to store things in their building. But it doesn't talk to occupancies so much. It doesn't talk to what people use their buildings for. That's in the building code under occupancy type. So the answer to your question generally is no, it doesn't talk to that.
Thank you, Chief. Councillor Butler?
Yes, thank you. And one last question with respect to licensing, and I don't know who you can direct this to, so maybe you can help me out there. Will licensing control party houses?
I believe that is a question that Mr. Brady can address.
Licensing would provide a system in place where the municipality identifies, you know, you have to have a license to be able to do a certain thing. But Niagara Lake has a licensing in place for B&Bs and as such. There's certainly additional bylaw enforcement to make sure that the rules that are put in place are in place. But does it completely restrict party houses? No.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Thank you, Councillor Butler. I will close Corporate and Community Services and turn the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Nutt. And scheduling the meetings, just want to remind everyone that Thanksgiving is next Monday, so that the next council meeting will be on October the 10th. Are there any meetings that we should be made aware of? Butler and then Councillor Luberts.
Thank you. There is a Ridgeway BIA meeting at 5:15 in Ridgeway at the St. Luke's Church.
Date?
This Wednesday at 5:15.
October the 4th. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. We have a BIA, Crystal Beach BIA meeting tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Crystal Ridge Library.
Thank you. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. We have an infrastructure services meeting being held here on October 10th at 5 p.m. in Conference Room 3.
Just before the council meeting. Did you want to announce that?
Yes, Your Worship. We have corporate and community services meeting October 10th at 4 p.m. prior to council.
Thank you. Councillor Passero.
Yes, we have Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting tomorrow here at Town Hall, 5 p.m., Committee Room 1, and Senior Citizens Advisory Committee, 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning at the Douglas Heights Senior Center.
Where the day again?
Is Wednesday of this week for the Senior Citizens Committee.
Anyone else? Then I'll entertain a motion for us to move into closed session in the format listed in the recommendation. Butler? Okay, so that we now go into closed session at 8:22. That's your motion?
Yes, that's my motion.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Okay, we're back in session. Can we have a resolution that we now rise and reconvene from closed session at 9:31 without report? Councillor Lubberts? Any questions or comments on that? Favor? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor Nutt, would you like to adjourn us?
Yes, please? I would, Your Worship. The Council and Committee meeting for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 9:31 p.m.
All those in favor? That is carried. Thank you all.